It's time for Cutting Edge Consciousness with Freeman Michaels and Barnett Bain. Thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
Good evening and welcome to Cutting Edge Consciousness. This is Freeman Michaels here with...
Barnett Bain. I like your FM radio voice that you just put on there. You just sort of dropped into a different octave.
Well, thank you very much.
That's very impressive.
Hey, I wanted to say congratulations to you.
Well, thank you. You heard I graduated.
Your daughter and I heard from your daughter that you've graduated. You are now officially a traffic school graduate.
Yes, I have. We're
very proud.
I have yet another diploma
over my desk.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
One more diploma with the great seal of the city of Los Angeles.
You're going to be able to wallpaper your bathroom with that. Those diplomas here in a minute. Between that and the parking tickets, you could cover the whole wall.
I'm actually working on wallpapering the block.
That's nice.
So it was a challenging course, I must say. My memory not being what it
was
6 months ago, the last time I did it.
Yeah, that's right. They should just reserve a chair for you there.
Well, I actually have an endowed chair there.
Nice. Very nice. Mm-hmm.
So lots going on in the world.
Yeah.
Moving faster and faster and faster. I got an email today for those of you that follow these things that on the 5th of June is the Venus transit. Did you know that?
I didn't.
You didn't? You thought it was the red line transit.
That's right.
You were wrong.
Yes. I just saw the signs that people don't want it to go under Beverly Hills, whatever transit it is they don't want.
That would not be the Venus transit. That's all about Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
This is a... an eclipse of the sun.
Oh, nice.
Venus is going to eclipse the sun.
Beautiful. How do you feel about that?
I need to dial in and get a somatic sense of that. I'll get back to you on that. But it is a once in 100-and-some-odd years event. And as is so much in this...
moment in time.
In this moment in time, it is freighted with all kinds of metaphoric... Symbology. Yep.
Indeed.
Yep.
So what sort of symbology has been showing up in your experience? That's loaded. Who have you been hearing from lately?
Well, frankly, we usually only take 2-3 minutes at the head of a broadcast. But I will go as far as to say, I'll plant this and we can follow it up later, or maybe we can invite our guests to comment.
See, now that's important. They have expertise in this area.
They are, well, they have a tremendous amount of expertise, and certainly in this area.
Yeah.
I heard from an authority.
Besides the CHP?
Yeah.
other than the judge?
Well, you know, we are in constant dialogue. It's a psychodynamic world we live in, and so very clearly...
You
inner
get
dynamics
some authorities
of authority issues and tensions that I'm exploring.
Nice.
So in addition to the California Highway Patrol, I heard from someone who wanted to enroll me into a course of study for which I had zero interest or appetite. And then I experienced... something that I haven't experienced for quite a long time, at least not at the receiving end. Perhaps I've been at the doling out end of this. But I experienced someone who was seeking to enroll me by I wouldn't go so far as to say disempowering me, but by kind of a sort of subtle self-aggrandizement that maybe I might be missing out on something.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's always good.
And
if you just knew, there's a little secret. If you just knew.
It's this thing about...
I think I can help you out.
Yeah, but we're at a place in our lives, at a moment in time, where perhaps we know enough that we can begin to... You know, these things are developmental. I'm not suggesting that my niece in the eighth grade knows enough.
Right.
But as an adult man, I know enough to be the author of my experience and to take responsibility for it fully. And when I cede or surrender or allow to be wrested from me my own autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
It is very, very disempowering, fundamentally disempowering. But I felt the play of it. I felt, you know, you either dream or you'll be dreamed by others.
That's right.
We do it. We create our experience consciously choosing and feeling and being and choosing and decide all of those elements, or by allowing others to structure our imagination for us. And that was a real-time experience.
Well, I think the topic of personal authority is totally apropos for today. And that we also hear from the authorities to whom we may have projected onto and abdicated a certain amount of authority to in our past, which shows up.
We're not talking about our guests here, folks.
No. We're talking, though. No, but we are talking about practical visionary.
Yes.
Becoming a practical visionary, having a sense of your own. Yep. A sense of self, or selves in this case, many little selves, parts of us, and aiming towards something that is bigger and larger that we can give ourselves to, which is empowering.
So true. It's such a fabulous distinction, because we're talking about, and in this case, we're talking about guests that we're going to join us shortly who are looking actively to empower themselves and others with tools to better meet the challenges of our own lives and the challenges that we face as a world, but not at the expense of one's own autonomy.
That's it.
So that is a very, very critical distinction, and one that it would behoove us all to develop a mastery of, more so now than perhaps ever before.
That's fantastic.
And with that, I want to invite our guests to join this conversation. We have with us today Corrine McLaughlin, my friend.
Hi.
Hi, Corrine, and my other good friend, Gordon Davidson.
And they're married.
Hello.
They are married.
And they've co-authored
so
a book.
So they will not be getting separate email blasts now. You've destroyed that for them. Thank you very much. So they're the co-authors of The Practical Visionary, among other books, Spiritual Politics, Builders of the Dawn. They're also the co-founders of the Center for Visionary Leadership in California, and I think is it North Carolina?
Yes, originally, and now in Arizona as well.
And now in Arizona, you know, you leave the room for 5 minutes,
yep.
And they are just spreading like ivy.
Well, we started in Washington D.C. Need I say more?
We're tracking all the way back to the founding fathers. So, Corrine directed a national task force for the President's Council. That was President Clinton on sustainable development. And Gordon is known as the founding director of the Social Investment Forum and of CERES, the Coalition for Environmentally Responsible Economies. They're both fellows of the World Business Academy and the Findhorn Foundation. And
they're here today.
And they're here today, and we are glad to have them both with us.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you, Barnett. It's wonderful.
So we're talking a little bit about personal authority and how we sometimes hear from external forces to whom we may have given authority in the past, abdicated our authority, and this sort of balance of determining for ourselves what we want to vest our energy in and how we want to direct our own lives from a more empowered personal responsibility level.
Yeah.
And I feel like you guys, this book is really about that. It's taking activism into a very personalized expression, activating in yourself something that then gets expressed outwardly and becomes a mechanism for change, but a very generous mechanism, not a finger wagging, but a sort of offer, if you will.
Well, yes, exactly. And I think what we've done with the Practical Visionary in our work now, after being visionaries for so many years, that's, you know, we're always liking to be on the cutting edge and get the new visions and kind of be ahead of the curve and bring some new ideas. You know, what we're realizing is that this cycle that we're in right now, we all need to get our feet on the ground more and be more practical visionaries. You know, bring together the higher vision, keep our eyes on the horizon, but keep our feet on the ground. And at the same time, you know, keep our hearts on fire for a better world.
Mm.
That's really where I'm moving to. And really honor that role of our conscious self, not just our higher self, our superconscious, not just our subconscious. You know, we need to work on and clean up and make friends with our subconscious, but understand the roles that we play consciously in our intentions and our using our personal will and aligning it with the higher evolutionary will to create a better world.
Much of what shows up in our world as unexpected or that we push back against, these are intentions that we hold below the level of our conscious awareness. And you, in the book, you speak to what is involved in making friends with the subconscious. And as we alluded to at the beginning of the show, our world is a hall of mirrors, and Freeman and I discuss this frequently, often. More and more we are aware of it being a dynamic expression of what is going on inside. And what are the suggestions that you can make for our listeners so that they can develop a closer relationship with their subconscious?
Yes, well, I think one of the key things is, first of all, to change the entire concept of our subconscious, because most people have an idea that it's this dark place, the Pandora's box, and if you go and connect to the subconscious, you're running the risk of getting swallowed up and taken over by it, which in fact is completely not the case. In all of our work, in what we've discovered is that the subconscious really has a very positive intention towards us at all times. It's trying to help. It's trying to keep us safe and secure. But it may be using very old, outmoded strategies to keep us from being hurt the way we might have been hurt in the past, or to make sure that we have all that we want and need. And so it's really coming into a deep, deep dialogue with that part of ourselves and really understanding what that part is really intending and how to communicate with it. And the key is, of course, to approach it with love, to approach it with a very open, inclusive, accepting kind of attitude that will really allow it to feel safe enough to actually open to you and communicate. And when you do that, you discover this whole world with all these different parts, different subpersonalities and beings there who have many different views and perspectives, many of which are extremely valuable, and they certainly help you understand why you function the way you do.
And that's such a thread throughout this book. One of the things you point out is that we're moving from the duality of either or to more of a both and, more of an inclusion. And I know, Corinne, from your work on the President's Council for Sustainability, that there were adversaries who got together and found themselves, you know, more aligned than they thought they were by moving away from the sort of either or mind, me and you, you know, sort of separation mentalities to more of a inclusive understanding. And this is sort of an evolutionary tale, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And they're right at the federal government at the highest levels, because the mandate from the president was to find a consensus, build a consensus on the need to protect jobs and to protect the environment. And it was so inspiring to me to see CEOs of major corporations, directors of major environmental groups, you know, all the big ones were there, and to see their process of, first of all, getting to know each other as human beings and really understanding each other's point of view and each other's gifts and how they could work together. And, you know, instead of the environmentalists making the corporate guys the bad guys, they say, okay, we understand you have to make a profit if you want to stay in business. Let's see how we can together help you make a profit in a way that protects the earth. And I worked on a task force on sustainable communities with AFL-CIO and Department of Commerce as my co-chairs, again, adversaries, and just seeing that if, you know, professionally facilitated, clear intentions of finding a consensus, finding common ground, it was amazing the results from that. It took some time, some years, and I think we're seeing over the time that people are coming on board with realizing we have to take both sides in account in many of these conflicts. And that is what I'm realizing is the world is moving into this age of synthesis. Take the best of both and raise it up to a higher level. You know, find this higher common ground.
Well, we're going
not
to
the dualistic thinking.
We're going to interrupt this conversation briefly for some commercial messages, and when we come back, we want to discuss a little more with Corinne and Gordon about the coming age of synthesis. So we will be right back here on Cutting Edge Consciousness.
Welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness, thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And we're back on Cutting Edge Consciousness. This is Barnett Bain with my co-host Freeman Michaels and our guests Corinne McLaughlin and Gordon Davidson. Before the break, Corinne and Gordon, you began to head into some of the territory that you cover in the book that has to do with this coming age, what you call this coming age of synthesis, which Freeman and I have referred to similarly as a mindset that that shifts to being aware of the bigger picture without losing sight of the current picture. So with that in mind, what are the kinds of things that we can begin to expect and look forward to that out of which will resolve some of the current crises we're facing in economics and in climate control and sustainability, et cetera, things like time banks and microenterprise, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, let me just also say, you know, look around us right now, today, everything is fusing and blending. You know, we have hybrid cars, we have fusion music, you know, that draws from all kinds of different types of music. We have all these mashups where you bring together video and music and, you know, graphics and various things. You have holistic medicine, you have transpartisan politics, you have interfaith dialogues. So already we're seeing that, like, socially responsible business, bringing doing good and doing well at the same time. You know, all over the place we see these ways that previous opposites, masculine, feminine, you know, women's roles, men's roles, all these things are blending and fusing. And when you get stuck in this duality, you're kind of living in the past. We have to move forward into this new way of seeing things.
And one of the things you said earlier, which I really like, is the directing. You said something about firing up our hearts, which I love that language, that that's a driver for decision making. And I want to talk more about that because to me, you know, I know personally, and I'll just include Barnett because I know he does this too. I have a tendency to drift up into my head. And what I am learning to do more is stay more in my heart and allow myself to access things. I know you mentioned this in the book, such as intuition, and I am much more inclined to follow through on things if my heart is, as you say, fired up. So I really want to probe into that piece of the puzzle.
I think that's really the key, and it relates very much back to what you were saying earlier about this whole question of maintaining individual autonomy while also participating in a larger movement or a larger vision. And I really think that that is like, humanity has viewed the, in a sense, the decay of our civilization and the increasing separation between human beings over the last decades and for a long time, and just kind of been passive. But all of a sudden, all over the world, people are just getting fired up. They're fed up, and they're fired up, and they're just saying, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. And they're just getting out of their chairs and going out on the streets and doing incredible things to create massive change. This, and I see that as a global awakening of the heart, that people are, and they're doing it often out of resonance and compassion for what's happening to people all across the globe, and they're demonstrating about issues that are beyond their personal interest into some larger issue. But at the same time, there's this tremendous deepening of their personal connection to spirit, to soul, to their own heart, and what do they really believe? What do they really feel in their heart that they want to do something about? And that's, I think that is behind all of this movement that we're suddenly seeing around the world over the last few years, all the risings and awakenings. And I think this is extremely key to the future of what's going to be happening on the planet.
That is beautiful. There is a frequency, an energy of hope and of optimism that is infectious and holds the boundaries of more and more of what can be possible.
Yeah.
And when that gets fired up, things really begin to change. We don't have a culture that has a mechanism that is currently in place, that is currently being used to bring forward the kinds of news and the kinds of things that are happening that foster that excitement and that passion that you're talking about. And in your book, you refer to things that, were they, if only they were more widely known, have the kinds, are the kinds of piece, of memes that can fundamentally shift the resonance of the planet. Things that are happening in the area, for instance, bioremediation and permaculture methods that create healthier food and all kinds of things. Would you take a moment here to share for with our listeners some of the miraculous things that are not over the horizon, but are just this side of the horizon?
Yeah, good point. I mean, that to me is the source of optimism and hope. And, you know, we talk about these heart qualities. The people involved, these innovators creating these new solutions to our problems, it comes out of this deep love for humanity, for life. And I think there's things like you mentioned with ways that we can create healthier food through looking at how nature does things and growing vegetables in our front yard, you know, looking at how we can create restorative justice, bringing together victims and offenders in crime to reduce repeat offenders, and time banks where people use electronic methods to keep track of how they trade their services. You know, 1 hour of time is worth the same, and people trade services. There's just so many of these solutions that I think are very inspiring for humanity today, and they come out of the heart. They really do. There's social investment where people are investing their money where their values are, and there's something like $2.7 trillion now invested in companies that have some kind of social screen that are based on values, you know, in how they treat people or how they treat the environment or what kind of things they avoid. And to me, that's just so inspiring that there's so many of these new solutions. More and more people are working with mediation and conflict resolution to find solutions to conflict.
And what we're talking about really is an evolving activism. I love the idea that you guys make the distinction that innovation is a form of activism. I mean, I know you tease out a bunch of different kinds. I mean, there's a traditional sort of warrior activism, but then there's all these other ways that we can be very active in demonstrating what it is we care about and then actuating that. And so I love the idea of the innovator as an activist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Talk about you can be an innovator, create new institutions. You can be a reformer, work from within an institution to transform it. You can be a spiritual warrior, we call them, stand up to the evils, demonstrate, you know, speak up, be a whistleblower, or you can be an exemplar and just work on embodying your values wherever you are.
That's the one. I mean, that honestly, that's the one that I think is incredibly, that's the be the change piece where, you know, it's easy sometimes to slip into finding an enemy out there when, as Barnett sort of started the show with, oftentimes if we, you know, see what's showing up in our experience as a mirror, it's a part inside of us. And so I think as we rectify that, or at least come to terms with it in some way, then that models so much. And modeling, I mean, I have little kids. They don't care what you say. My little kids want to see how I am energetically, this frequency level of how I show up in the world.
As you say in the book, when you begin to develop a friendship with your subconscious and you begin to see that your subconscious is an ally and it will work in harmony with you, but it requires the willingness to participate and to own what is being reflected back to us in this kind of hall of mirrors.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and it's so key that, you know, people are taking their own autonomy in all of this. And working with your subconscious and learning to really make it your partner and your ally increases your autonomy, as does your ability to connect with your higher part of your being, whatever you want to call that, the soul, higher self, and gain the vision that that part of your being has, can make available to you. Bring those three dimensions together, the higher superconscious part, the conscious self, and the subconscious, and bringing them into close relationship, and in a sense, the ultimate synthesis, is really key to being able to be truly autonomous. And I think one of the areas where there's not been enough emphasis is on the conscious self, really being able to understand your own conscious self as a key facilitator of all the relationships, the relationship with your superconscious, relationship with your subconscious, and your relationships with the world. And that in no way should we be denigrating in any way the conscious self, you know, with this idea of, oh, it's just the ego and we have to get rid of it,
yep,
all this kind of stuff. It's completely erroneous. It is a beautiful part of ourselves that is meant to fulfill this coordinating, synthesizing function in all these different dimensions.
That's so critical, and you speak in the book, you lay out these eight keys that we've covered. It is clear that this is not a linear sequence of events, but these are plates to be spun in a constantly dynamic, ongoing process, once for all and all for once. You get all of these plates spinning, and together they begin to birth an entirely new experience.
And I think what we're talking about as well, and you seem to be alluding to it, is that I think we're growing in consciousness, at least I hope I'm growing in consciousness, to where I can begin to understand the complexity of things. I don't have to crunch everything down to either or. I can accept that things are true and not true at the same time. And there's more dimension to my perspective. And that, I think, is a huge offer. Then we don't have to make it us and them. We don't have to crunch everything down to who's right and who's wrong. We can allow for some nuance and some gray area.
Right. And in the sense that you think about the being, if you believe in such a thing, as the being that holds the whole world in its consciousness and encompasses everything. The more we can hold in our own being and allow to be present in our consciousness, the more we approach that level of greater and greater inclusivity and livingness, which is that state where you encompass so much.
I'm going to quote Barnett Bain here. He likes to say, we go from saying, I'm not my brother's keeper, to saying, I am my brother's keeper, to saying, I am my brother. We begin to see the whole way that there's no separation, really, on some level.
Right. That's it. That's the approach of approaching, and we keep expanding that. There's no end point to it.
It's a very, very dramatic and very empowering book. We recommend it to all of our listeners. One of the more powerful takeaways for me, having read this book, is it very clearly points out, it's very optimistic. It very clearly shows me how far we've come.
That's it. I love the historic context, and that is actually illustrated by your own experience going back to being, Korean at Berkeley and being part of the People's Park Movement and all these other pieces, that it has this sort of, I love your evolution because I feel like that's the evolution of a lot of people who've moved into this sort of new brand of activism, if you will.
Yes. What a long, strange trip it's been.
Yes, indeed.
but it's helped me appreciate all these different points of view, from being a political activist in Berkeley on the streets, to working in Washington, D.C. in government, to working with businesses, to working, with visionaries trying to bring their new ideas and innovative solutions out into the world. And that's why we're emphasizing now we all need to keep our feet on the ground and pay attention to details, pay attention to taking our next step towards the vision, not just the big vision, but what's the next step?
What's the heart vision?
Pardon me?
The heart vision.
The heart?
We start with the heart vision.
Yes, good.
And let it unfold from there. So that means you don't ever have to lose your tie-dye, Corinne.
You can keep your tie-dye.
It may be under your suit and tie, but it's there.
That's right.
All you need is love.
All you need is love. That was never more true.
Yeah.
But we have grown in the understanding of that. Sorry?
I work for Rolling Stone magazine, too.
I never knew that about you.
That's fantastic.
Love folk music, yeah.
I never knew that about you.
That's funny. Well, listen, I think this book is absolutely beautiful. Practical Visionary, of course, is the name of the book, available at bookstores. And I think that's thepracticalvisionary.org, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, so thepracticalvisionary.org is the website. We are so grateful you guys took the time to hang out with us.
Yes, well, thank you for inviting us.
Yes, thank you very much.
We appreciate it. We look forward to seeing you, catching up again with you very, very soon. Sending lots of love to you both. And thank you for joining us here on Cutting Edge Consciousness.
And for those of you listening, stay tuned because we'll be right back after these messages.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness, thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness. Freeman Michaels here with Barnett Bain talking about Practical Visionary. That was fun, man. I love it. I love so much that one of the things that Gordon was saying, we framed it a little different. He was talking about the ego of the quote unquote egoless, the folks trying to abdicate their ego. I'm going to be spiritually superior by letting go of my ego, which is a huge
try reaching for the doorknob with no ego.
Well, it's just a huge ego trip.
Try putting your shoes on.
The big ego trip. I'm going to be egoless. Good luck.
That sounds like my ego talking.
That sounds like my ego talking. Exactly. So I love that. I mean, that was a funny distinction there that he was making, that we actually, you know, end up in some very real way embracing the parts of us, you know, that may wander into areas that we want to curtail, but we do it in a very gentle, very human way. And then the idea is, even in the activism, is not to crush other people for where they're at. It's about finding commonality and finding a common sort of goal and objective and something we can all buy into and move forward towards. And that's exciting to me. That's a very exciting conversation. So I'm thrilled we had the opportunity to have it. And we're continuing to have it, right? Barnett Talk, you're on talk radio, man.
It's radio, that's right. No dead.
Shaking your head, nodding your head, yes, does not help.
I'm thinking we're on television now.
That's good. So, he's ready. He's already got us on HBO.
Totally ready.
Yep.
It's a wonderful way that they language this idea. They call it the age of synthesis.
Mm.
You know, we've referred to in our own way, and it's kind of like blind people scratching at an elephant. You know, it feels like some people are scratching the trunk.
Oh,
it feels like a tree.
And right, right, right,
leg,
right, right,
it feels
right.
Like. So it's wonderful to hear others framing what is emergent, age of synthesis, and we talk about it as being open to a bigger picture without losing sight
complexity
of the current picture and this kind of emerging complexity. It is very clear that there is a new way of being that is happening, that is collaborative and cooperative, that has a different sense of structure. Is not so much the totalitarianism of hierarchy in the old sense of the word. There are solutions that seem to be everywhere. And as we said on the show, our media structures, and they're just not set up, nor are they, nor is it helpful to the bottom line of their business models to focus on these things. Nobody is bad or wrong,
right.
But there are so many fantastic emergent things happening across every domain of life, and there isn't the same kind of drama as the latest horrendous scandal that we could follow and
the housewives of
24/7, and that is changing.
Well, and you've made this distinction. I mean, even that language, age of synthesis, it's developmental. And look, when we talk about, see, one of the things in here is they really utilize the language of spirituality coming into activism. There's a spiritual imperative, right, that's really moving us to act versus an activism simply out of rebellion. That feels like a teenage thing.
Well, it's as you say that, it occurs to me that that wisdom is a maturing. You can... That is born out of a maturing relationship with the self and with others. How many years as children and as young adults and then as, frankly, as older adults, how many times have we heard...
The day before yesterday.
About yesterday at lunch? Right. How many times have we heard that... We should be generous,
right?
Or that we should tithe.
Oh, this is the finger wagging. Yeah.
This kind of thing, and we know that we should be altruistic. We know that these are higher ideals, and yet we don't always relate to them. They're not organic from the inside out in quite the same way that I can be relatively more selfless vis-a-vis my relationship with my children, for example. But what I'm beginning to see more and more, and what I'm beginning to experience from the inside out, frankly, is a kind of slow maturing,
yeah,
where there is a green shoot of something new bursting through that of its own volition. Yes, it's still about getting things, getting love and getting attention and making a living and getting ahead and all of these things. But at
sometimes
the same,
it is, sometimes it isn't.
Well, at the same time.
Yes, at the
at
same
the
time.
At the same time.
I support
there
that.
Is this other thing, yeah, that is about what can I contribute and what can I give? And that is its own reward, this kind of exalted giving.
Well, and it occurs when your heart is fired up.
Yeah, yeah. With a closed heart. You have no access to that.
No, then you're just getting and surviving, and you're everything's getting crunched down to this.
But it is
very small.
It's a
possibility.
It is a seasoning.
It
represents a new kind of maturing, and maybe, I don't know, I'm speculating, maybe some of it has to do, maybe some of it is the flower of certain personal and social stresses over the last years. That's very possible, well, that we have a sensitivity and a compassion suddenly that has kind of mulched the earth so that something new can spring up. But something new is indeed springing up.
Yeah. And look, let me go back for a second, because you were
I'll
talking
take a breath
about...
now.
Yeah, please. No, I'm just kidding. Come on. That was beautiful.
Come on.
The idea that the institutions are limited, they are. But look, if you think for a second, and I was mentioning this earlier, that this is a spiritual context. Spirituality... 50 years ago, centered around religious institutions.
Dogma.
And part of autonomy is the coming apart of that. And I'm going to hand it over and say your generation.
My generation?
Yeah. Well, yours and theirs, you know, Gordon,
yeah,
and Corrine's,
yeah,
are partly responsible, yeah, for all of that. And it having sort of busted apart one construct.
Feeling very old now.
Come on now. One construct, there's another construct. It's easy to go about dismantling these constructs that frame our reality. Once you've done it once, you start to do it more and more. And so, you know, the idea that this evolving wisdom is coming from folks who have worked at this, who have deconstructed these, like I said, constructs.
I don't know that they deconstruct. I mean, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, talk to me.
I'm not being contrarian. I'm not so sure that it is a deconstruction,
right,
as much as it is adding on wings. You build a little cottage, and you live inside of that cottage, and then all of a sudden you realize, I could put a wing on here, I could put a wing on here, I can put a second story on here. And there is more chance, more choice. There is more complexity. There is more dimension, not at the expense of anything.
Right.
That stuff never left. It didn't so much deconstruct as I grew more windows, I grew more capacity, and to operate when I was younger, I lived in a worldview of absolutes and guarantees. Blacks and white. I wanted insurance. I wanted to know my... I put away my nuts like a squirrel for the winter. And I wanted to know that my savings was secure and that I put in a day's work and that I could look forward to retirement. And that would be there.
You lose that a couple times and you learn you lose it wasn't that once so reliable.
But this is a maturing that happens.
Yes.
And... for a younger person, it is not good or bad. It is simply developmentally appropriate that at a very young person, the world is all about me. And eventually, it is still all about me, but in a different way. My sense of me extends to the we. It begins to shift, but... it requires some seasoning and some growth, and you can't jump steps.
No, and I agree. But there's also a hand. So something I'm willing to let the spiritual piece go, but I have one more little piece to say about it. So look, here's the personal story. My parents had to leave the Catholic Church. They had to, you know, be done with it. They had to say, I reject it. And in doing that, there was huge pushback from, you know, their family, you know, my extended family, my grandparents and so forth, when they did that. But it was a big deal for them to go, this is not right for me. I don't believe it anymore. It was a big, you know, thing to break away. Me, I don't need to break anything. I call myself a cafeteria Catholic. We show up, you know, we do this and that. We don't do that and that. You know, we're into parts of it. We appreciate it for what it has to offer, and the parts we don't want to participate, we don't. We're very, I think, typical of a lot of American Catholics today who kind of go, okay, that works for me, that doesn't. I don't abdicate authority. I don't need a priest or a bishop or I don't even need sacraments necessarily to get to God. I have a direct line at this point. I've grown. I've progressed. But I understand that's on the backs of a very painful process that my parents went through. That is what I was alluding to. And so there was a whole friction of saying, I'm willing to break this construct that opened up possibilities for me directly in this context.
Makes sense. It's great.
Yeah. But then that it continues to evolve, and that then, you know, I have my own, you know, everything you said I can resonate with. Like, I did buy into certain things that I was told about the way the world works, what was possible, who I was, who I ought to be, and so forth and so on, that I see now as limitations. And I've had to do my own friction stuff to go, wait a minute, I don't buy into that, or I'm willing to look beyond that. And so that is where I do see the practical visionary, this evolving self, where there's tools and there's guideposts and there's people saying we're ready, and there's this very exciting shift, movement, whatever we want to call it, that we're part of, that is spawning all kinds of incredible things, such as these micro lending and the how people cooperate and collaborate versus compete. You know, compete okay, but not so much. Here's another way to balance that out. Here's a new opportunity. Here's a new possibility. That's exciting.
It is, and there will be challenges ahead.
Sure.
Challenges ahead are also that we will own as being reflected, a Hall of Mirrors stuff,
right.
Micro lending, and all of these non-traditional economic systems. And there will be parts of me reflected in the system. There'll be pushback, there'll resistance to it. And in the end, there'll be parts of me that say, but I have, it won't be an exact representative mirroring, reflection, but it will point to the parts of me that are have invested my safety, my identity, my sense of security, my sense of meaning and belonging inside a very particular structures.
I get it.
And when those fall apart, you and I just at lunch, we were talking about some resistances, some challenges to our own kind of sense of well-being and safety and worth. Well, what happens if when we become so giving, not saying we're not pretending we're that giving, but when we move to the edge of our comfort, our current comfort zone, with extending and giving, there's the part that says, "Well, what about me? About me? There's that little part where, you know, what about my toys? I don't want to share all my toys. Is there any get in there for me? Well, if I give and I give, will I get something?" So, not to make it bad, not to make it wrong, but it is a It's like a little Velcro place, a little sticky place. Yeah. And we roll along and roll along, and it's all flows beautifully. And then there are little moments that kind of grab you and trigger things.
Course,
and
of
not
course.
Bad, but those are played out inwardly, and they're also on the screen of the Hall of Mirrors.
Yeah, I want to say something, though, about this, which I was really, I'm always impressed with this in you, that there was a particular piece, actually, in this piece about competition where you were saying, you know, I'm really working on that. And it's interesting because you were in a meditation and you in your mind's eye said, I'm really ready to sort of face this pattern of falling into that small voice, the grabbing piece of, am I competing here or do I, you know, whatever. And you, what happened very quickly after that is you called in an opportunity to see it.
But to frame it.
Yeah.
I called it in, I invited it, and I said very clearly, I want to deal with it, and I want to bring in an issue to deal with it, to mirror it. But I don't. I want it to meet me at the rate that I can handle it.
Yes.
I don't want to be overwhelmed with it. I don't want to be smacked around by it. I don't want to flounder in it. But I'm committing to meeting it, and I want it to meet me at the to challenge me, but to meet me at the level that I can. Deal with without becoming inundated or wanting to abandon ship.
That now I'm going to track back in terms of practical visioning work. That is brilliant because it is precise. It is saying I'm willing to face this piece because when it comes up, I realize it costs me. It's painful.
It hurts.
It hurts. I don't want to keep doing it. And so I'm really willing to face it. And you put out there that you wanted to meet it face on in a way where you could really move through it, learn and grow. That's brilliant. That's practical visioning. That's a tool. That's a way of saying, I'm willing to confront this, and here's how I want to do it. And your universe provided it.
Sure. Now I'm talking about it on the air. Yeah. To a listening audience of 2 million people.
And when you're going through it, I don't know. It has some bumps along the way. But that's a different story. But it's not, actually. It's part of the whole thing of saying, okay, I'll stand in the discomfort for the sake of really owning and knowing what this is about for me.
Yeah, you make a commitment, and that commitment is both practical and mystical.
Yes.
And when they come together, they are synthesized in that visionary. But that visionary very much is embodied, has feet on the ground, and is also operating with a sense of the realms that are not physical, calibrated into senses and being states that are beyond the five.
Yeah.
But here's where the show and tell happens. Here's where the long division shows. Well, we're looking at Spence. And he is flashing, but he never seems to get that I don't have my glasses on.
so
there we go. 19 seconds, 18 seconds. Either something's going to lift off or we're running out of time.
So thank you all for tuning in. We appreciate it. If you enjoy the show, please share it with friends and keep coming back to
Cutting Edge Consciousness. Thank you all.